My name is Mark, and I'm an alcoholic. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and recovering alcoholics around the world. It is now time for our featured speaker of the evening. This is brought to you by the Valley Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, the undefeated, undisputed king of speaker meetings. Tonight's event is brought to you for your sobriety pleasure. And now...
Hi, my name is Rudy, and I'm an alcoholic. And let's get ready for recovery.
If you're not motivated by that, there are such unfortunates. This 27-year sober member is a fourth-generation Visalian. He has started several meetings of our fellowship, been active in H&I, and held positions at our central office. His AA motto is, "The big book is the owner's manual for my brain." And now, with all the earnestness at your command, will you welcome, please, from Visalia, Jimmy!
Boy, oh boy, we are people that normally wouldn't mix. Can you imagine if we all got drunk, what would happen here? They call this the Creative Center for a whole new reason, I'll tell you that. I was born and raised in this town. My family's been here for quite a few generations now. And I was told by an elder statesman tonight that I never share enough about my drunkalogue, so I thought I'd share a little bit about that. I can never remember a time when I didn't drink. Seriously. I mean, any family function, it was okay for a kid to go get a beer or whatever. It just wasn't even a consideration. You know, you couldn't drink all you wanted, but, you know, a little beer, something like that was fine, a little champagne or whatever. And alcohol was just always there. And I can still remember the first time I got a friend from school, and he said that his parents didn't drink. What? What's wrong with them? That's what I thought, you know, because when I went to a family function, all my cousins, all my uncles, everybody had one of those little silver flasks in their suit pocket. And I'd go up to them and they'd give me a little drink, you know. And that's the way how it worked. But I'll tell you what really happened, where I can remember when I turned into an alcoholic. We were out here south of town. Our neighbor was tearing down an old barn, and we were burning a bunch of the old wood out there. And in the middle of winter, it was frosty, real cold, and there was a bottle of VO going around the circle there. And I don't remember exactly how old I was. I wasn't very old at all, 11, 12 maybe at the most. And someone handed me this bottle of VO. I did what they did. I put it up in the air, took a big old swallow. Oh, my God, it burned. Ooh, I couldn't catch my breath, you know, like that. And all of a sudden, that sucker went down. And I still remember it. I'm getting goosebumps. It went down my esophagus into my stomach. And all of a sudden, I swear, if it would have been dark, I could have pointed my finger at the wall and there'd be a light shining out my fingers. I mean, it just instantly went through every nerve in my body, and life was okay. Just okay. And at that moment, I can still remember thinking, well, that's what's been wrong with me. For some reason, I have an alcohol deficiency. I really thought that. No wonder my dad drinks so much. God, you know, why wouldn't you? If alcohol had a reaction to anybody like it had with me, why wouldn't you drink? So, you know, I was raised on a ranch. We had a cattle ranch up in Raymond. And as kids, we'd go up there, and there was one whole refrigerator in that pantry that was nothing but beer. I mean, it was fully stocked with beer all the time. And there used to be this little window there, and I used to sleep out in the one of the outdoor rooms there, and bunkhouse. And we used to go out there, and one of us would go in acting like we're getting a root beer or something, and we'd pass a six-pack of beer out the window. And while everybody's inside getting drunk, we're getting drunk on the outside, you know. And that was just normal. We'd get up in the morning, work cattle, do whatever. And that was before I ever thought about getting a driver's license. And I just thought about tonight. I was driving drunk before I ever had a driver's license. I'd have the old Jeep up there just laughing my ass off, getting it stuck, running into things. How in the heck all his kids lived through that, I'll never know. And so my drinking continued, and you would think that seeing my dad, as bad of an alcoholic he was, because when I was a very small child, I used to worry about my dad because he wouldn't come home till real late. I knew he'd be out drinking somewhere, and he wouldn't leave the bars until they closed. So when everybody went to bed, I'd still be worrying about Dad. So I get up, and I have this big picture window. We live a quarter mile off of the road. Big picture window. I'd take a chair. I'd sit it up in front of that picture window, and I'd sit there and wait to see if Dad would get home. And I'd see these cars traveling up and down Avenue 264. Is that him? Is that him? No. And then all of a sudden I'd see him turn into the driveway, you know, 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. And as soon as I saw him come in the driveway, I could go back to bed. I'd pick up that chair, put it underneath the table, and nobody was the wiser, you know. Now, going through that, you would think, why in the heck would somebody drink? You know, why would you put anybody through that kind of hell? But I'm an alcoholic. And my dad got sick in 1975, the same year I graduated from high school. That caused all kinds of problems in the family. So I went ahead and went to college. I ended up going to Cal Poly. And if you don't know about Cal Poly, that was the party school at the time. I had one friend that was an ag engineering department, and his very first project was, now this is ag engineering, they had to come up with something and build it out in the shop that would be used on a ranch. He got an A on his project, and it was Kager refrigerator. That was his ag project, a Kager refrigerator. So those are the kind of people I hung around. And in college, I worked for a brief time at Cork and Bottle. It was a chain of liquor stores over there. And I still can't believe this, but it's the honest God truth. If you worked there, no matter if you were part-time or anything, if you worked there, you got a discount, a 15% discount, I think it was. And I sat down one time and figured it out, because we were having all these parties over there and everything else. I was the one in charge of going and getting the booze. I saved more money on my discount than I ever made there. I go in there and buy 3 Kagers a night sometimes. Put it in that good old Kager refrigerator. And I do remember one thing. Old Milwaukee. I see a lot of eyes lighting up out there. You remember that old stuff. I used to think it was swamp water. You know? And we could get that stuff with my discount for about $14 a keg. And we could sell it for 25 cents a glass and make money. Boy, those were the good old college days, you know? And while I was going to college, I could hold it together during the week and let it go on weekends. And I graduated with a degree, came back here, and started farming on my own. And I remember one night here, I was going to go to the PPAV for a big dance. I was going to meet a bunch of my friends down there. And so I got my four-wheel drive truck, and I cleaned it all up. You know, I washed it all down. I'm thinking, well, I might get lucky tonight and meet a gal or something. And I armor all the seats, and I armor all the steering wheel. And I'm sitting there drinking at the PPAB hall, and I look up, and it's about a quarter after one. And I thought, they're going to be shutting this place down pretty soon. I ain't ready to stop, so I'll run over to the Beacon Station that used to be here on Mineral King. And, you know, I got down there about 1:30, and now there's just me. I have no intentions of taking anybody else. I'm by myself. And this is another reason why I'm an alcoholic. I walked in there and bought two cases of beer. Seemed reasonable to me. Nothing's going to be open till 6. Didn't want to run out. So I didn't know what else to do. I didn't want to go home yet. I was having way too much fun. So I decided to drive up to the parks. Up through Three Rivers I go, drinking my Coors Light. Go right past the Ranger Station. You know, they're closed. It's 3 o'clock in the morning or something. And I'm going up there, and I'm, you know how those switchbacks are up there. I think I'm Mario Andretti. I forgot, I need to update that a little bit. I'm showing my age. Dale Earnhardt Jr., you know, race car guy for you younger people. And anyway, I'm going up there, and I'm, you know, this was before seatbelt laws or anything else. And all of a sudden, I'm making this left-hand turn, and it was a little sharper than I thought, so I'm really laying into it. And the next thing I know, I'm sitting on the passenger seat. I look over there, and the steering wheel's going like this. And I look up, and the next thing I see down there is, you know, the river looks about that big. And I thought, well, this is the end of this. Bam! The last thing I remember was seeing all this dirt coming up over the top of that truck. Well, I came to, looked around, and I was still alive. You know, I looked around, I was still close to the road. I got on the driver's side, and heck, I put it in four-wheel drive. I backed out, headed home, still drinking my Coors, you know. And the next morning, I woke up and I thought, man, that was a heck of a dream I had last night, going up to the park, blah, blah. You know, at this time, most of my life is hearsay. I don't remember much of it, you know. People told me what happened. But I'll never forget walking out to the front, to my truck that morning, and I look out there, and the front of the bumper on my truck looks like a horseshoe. The only thing that saved me from going down there, I looked at it later, was this huge boulder. And I ran right into that sucker. You know, that was God doing for me that I definitely couldn't do for myself. If it was up to me, I'd be down there in the bottom of that thing. That's how my drinking was. I couldn't stop. Once I started drinking, I was gone. You know, and I always like to watch the military channel, and you know, they have this, you watch them, and during World War II, not so much now, but they'd have these guys on a radio, and the artillery, they'd say, give them the coordinates, and they'd fire a couple of rounds, and once they got it dialed in, they'd say, fire for effect. It was ready to go. Well, that's what alcohol was for me. I knew it hit the target, so I just drank for effect. I never socially drank. That wasn't in my vocabulary. Socially drink? What does that mean? I never did it. I don't know what that is. You know, you got a bottle there, it's going to keep pouring. I had bartenders in this town that knew me well enough not to ask if I wanted another drink. They'd see that one getting low, they'd just bring another one. You know, and I was known in every bar in town, and another interesting thing was when I turned 16, all the nice restaurants in town knew my family. You know, the Depot, Vinny's Press, back there, Vinny's, you know, and so I'd ask all the owners, you know, can I start a charge account here? Just send me a bill once a month. Sure, Jim. So the waitresses see me signing these darn dinner bills, taking girls out on dates and stuff, and all of a sudden one of them one night said, "Would you like a cocktail?" I said, "Hell yes." You know, 16-year-old kid ordering cocktails at the depot, at the Vinnie's Press, and at Finney's. They didn't know I was only 16. Heck, what 16-year-old can sign a bill? So, yeah, I always got a kick because I had this vision of my friends over by 4A Liquor trying to get some drunk to buy them booze, and I'm sitting in the depot. I never had to worry about getting booze. I don't remember a time when I wanted a drink where I couldn't get it. I always had it. I always had it. So what happened, and I'll get to my sober fest here, what happened to me was one night I went out, and of course at that time, towards the end of my drinking career, my best friend happened to be the best, the largest liquor salesman in the county. You know, if you're going to be a good alcoholic, you better have a friend that's a liquor salesman. And I used to get a lot of my stuff at discounted rates from him. And anyway, I went over to his house one night, and I said, "What are you guys doing?" He said, "Well, it's our anniversary, so we're going to go out to dinner tonight out at the depot. And there's this one table over there that is off by itself between the bar and the dining area. And he had that reserved for him. And I went over to another friend's house, and I said, "Hey, Jimmy and Carol are having their anniversary. Let's go over there and buy them a bottle of wine and send it in." That was my intention. Well, being an alcoholic, my intentions never work out the way I originally planned. So we're in there in the bar, and I sent him in a nice bottle of Peach Porter wine. And we're sitting there having a drink. And all of a sudden, Jimmy, being Jimmy, asked, who bought us this wine? Well, I said, "Well, shoot, we'll go in and have a drink with him and Carol." And oh my God, pretty soon, the last thing I remember was ordering one more round of drinks, and then I went into a blackout. I don't remember anything after that. The next thing I knew was, you know, when you come to after a good drunk, you don't really want to look the world in the face right away, so you kind of, you know, you got to take stock. Where are you? What's happened? You know, you don't know where you're at. So I carefully opened up my left eye and looked around, and I closed it real quick because there was an elephant there. Yes, there was an elephant there. And so my keen alcoholic mind sitting there saying, "Well, Jim, you did it now. You finally busted your brain. You're probably sitting at the state hospital in Porterville. They put you away. You're cracked." And I thought to myself, and I'm still legally drunk probably. It's 5 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And I said, "Well, maybe I just overreacted. I'll look again." Then there was lions, tigers, and bears this time. I closed my eyes and I go, "Oh my God, what have I done now?" And so the second time I opened my eyes, I did remember seeing a door, you know. And I thought to myself, "Okay, no matter what I see, I'm going to get to that door and get out of this place." You know, and I opened up my eyes, I jump out of that bed, I'm headed towards that door, there's birds, there's elephants, there's tigers, there's, you know, and I hit that door and I open it up and I go out, and what had happened was those friends that went down to the depot with me took me back because we went in their car and they didn't want me to drive home, so they threw me in their spare bedroom. Well, his wife liked to make stuffed animals. But in my stupor at that time, I just thought I had lost it. I was seeing pink elephants, all this stuff. I haven't had a drink since. But I didn't get to AA. I stayed out there for 2.5 years on a dry drunk. And if you don't know what a dry drunk is, that's a temperance tantrum. If you've ever seen a little two-year-old have a temper tantrum, that's an alcoholic not being able to get his liquor. And that's what I was like. I turned into the most miserable SOB you ever saw in your life. And just to tell you a little bit of how my days would start back then, I had a spray business. And it had this John Deere high cycle on it. You know, it was the first one that had a computer in it. You know, being an alcoholic, you have to get the best of everything. Had a computer in it to adjust the spray. And I had this truck that had a flatbed and a fifth wheel on it. And the fifth wheel had my tank for my water and everything else. Well, I pull into Joe Fisher's down here to fill up with gas at 5 o'clock in the morning and diesel. And, you know, most people check the oil. Normal thing. Okay, that's normal, right? I pull that dipstick. It'd be a quart load. I don't know if your mind thinks like my mind does. I have since learned that a normal, rational human being will go buy a quart of oil and put it in and go on with his day. No. You got to understand, that engine's using a quart of oil. I can't be down. This is the busiest time of the year for me. Well, if it breaks down, I'm just going to have to buy a new truck, $20,000. So a 98-cent quart of oil turned into $20,000. And that's how my day started. You can imagine what the rest of the day was like. You know, that is what's called uncontrolled alcoholic thinking. You know, my brain just doesn't work right. And that's why I say this is the owner's manual for my brain. You know, and it was about this time of year, and my cousin, some of you may know him, Grass, him and I worked together. He did the advising and I did the spraying. And we were out here west of town somewhere, and my wife was leaving me. I was in financial trouble. Nothing was going right, and he had been in the program since February of that year. And so he's out, he comes by to see me, and I get down off of that spray rig, and, you know, some of you probably know what alkali dirt is. Well, on the roads, if it's real alkali, you get a bunch of dust about 6 to 12 inches deep from driving up and down that thing. It's just powder. And I got off of that thing, and I started crying, and I fell face first in that dust. I was emotionally and physically just exhausted. I couldn't take it anymore. Now, you have to realize how pitiful I was at that time. I'm sitting there crying. I've got all this dust on my face that is now mud rolling down my face. And I'm looking up at my cousin. And he looks down at me and he says, "Why don't you go to an AA meeting with me tonight?" Now, I'm at the end of my rope. Where else do I have to go? You know what my response to him was? "I haven't had a drink in 2.5 years. What good would a blankety blank AA meeting do me?" He looked at me and said, "Can't do any harm." So he took me to a Tuesday night men's stag meeting. I go walking into that Tuesday night men's stag meeting, and they were a real old-time group. You know, they knew how to treat a newcomer. They left the last 20 seconds for me to say something, you know. I looked up at the clock, and I said, "I'm Jim. I'm an alcoholic. I haven't had a drink for 2.5 years. And they thought they literally, as bad as I looked, thought I'd finished off a bottle before I walked in. And, you know, that started a road to recovery that night. I had nowhere else to go. I had nothing else to do. I didn't know why I thought the way how I thought. I didn't know why I acted the way how I acted. I didn't know why in the world, when things happened in my life, I took them the wrong way. You know? I not only thought for myself, I knew what you were thinking. Does that sound familiar? And anyway, after several months of going to that men's stag meeting and other meetings and trying to get outside help, one night a good friend of mine that had 20-some years at the time, they kept telling me, if you just do the steps, Jim, if you just do the steps, it'll get better. Okay, so one Wednesday morning after hearing this for about the 40th time, I got out a big book. I got in my rocking chair at home, pulled out my cross pen. I always carry a cross pen. Turned to page 59 where the steps are listed. We admitted we are powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. Okay, check that off. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Yeah, check that off. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood Him. I was born Catholic. I know all this spiritual stuff. Yeah, check that off. Made a searching, fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Well, see, I'm Catholic, so I do the thing called confession. I hadn't done it in 10 years, but I do that. So I said, did a thorough inventory, and I didn't know anybody at God dang amends. They all did it to me. Check that off. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Again, I'm Catholic. I do the thing called confession. Check that off. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Yeah, why not? Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Hey, do something. You know, it was a prayer like that. 8, made a list of persons we had harmed. Well, there weren't none of them. Skip that one. Check that one off. You know. Made direct amends to such people wherever... Well, I don't know. They all owe me something. Check that off. Okay, 10. Continue to take... Okay, I'll do that. I'll promptly admit if I'm ever wrong. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. I did that. I checked that off. Put the book down. I swear as God is my witness, about 10 minutes later, a friend of mine that worked at Tulare View Mental Hospital gave me a call. He said, Jim, there's a guy here who was brought in drunk and disorderly last night. We called Pine. They're going to take him. He needs a ride over there. You want to do a his words, you want to do a little 12-step work and take him to Pine? I said, I'll be right over. I opened up the big book and checked off 12. Next week, I went to that men's stag. I told them what I'd done, and it hadn't gotten any damn better. What's wrong with you people? And their jaws hit the table. They did not know what they were going to do with this crazy redhead. You know? And thank God they did not give up on me. You know, I got to ask one of the guys years later, he's gone on now, Bill Lindenberg. I said, Bill, why did you guys put up with me? And he said, because, Jim, we could tell you really wanted it. You know, you wanted it. You would always call somebody. You wouldn't go out and take a drink. Those guys would meet me at Denny's. I'd call them up in a terrible way. Can you hang on for an hour? I'll meet you at Denny's. We'll have a cup of coffee. Or come on over. I can't get away. I'm working here at the house. I can't get away. Come on over. You know? Those are the guys that kept me alive. You know? Well, I finally did the steps the right way. And if you're an alcoholic like me, this is truly the owner's manual for my thinking. I learned a long time ago when I was a kid, we ordered this car from Mahoney and Odell down here. It's a Ford LTD. And it was going to be the first car that I actually got to drive when I turned 16. So, you know, I picked out the stereo. And, God, I keep showing my age. It was a supersonic surround sound. 8-track AM FM stereo. You know? And so it was the top of the line that you could get in a car at the time, you know. And so we got it delivered, and, you know, I'm in there, and I got this wonderful stereo playing and 8-track tapes going, and the only problem was it didn't have a fade from the front to the back. I could go side to side, but no front to back. Well, the heck with it. You know, can't have everything. So for 4 years, we drove that car. I took it out on dates. Never got to listen to the stereo the way I liked it. All of a sudden, my dad says, we need a new car for Mom. We go in there. You know, I'm cleaning the car out. I'm taking all the stuff out of the glove box. All of a sudden, I see this pamphlet in there. So you have just purchased the supersonic 8-track AM/FM stereo. Owner's manual. I opened it up, and on the very first page, it had the schematics of all the dials. And on the one dial where I knew it faded from left to right, you pushed it in. It faded from front to back. So for the last 10 miles that we owned that car, I got to listen to the stereo just the way I wanted it. So now when I get something new, I pull out the owner's manual. It's amazing what you can find out in those things. I have my Expedition out there. I found out it had a warning in it. I got a kick out of it. I was laughing my head off. It said, if you happen to be on anabuse, be careful of filling up your car because a lot of gasolines contain alcohol now. You can have a reaction. It's in my owner's manual. So it must be a pretty bad reaction if you're taking that stuff and you get any gas on you and it has alcohol in it. Yeah. In my owner's manual, you know. So I always pull out the owner's manual. And what I learned to do was I went to a Joe and Charlie convention one time, and it's a big book study. And I was 9 years without a drink, and I went through this big book, and I started doing this. I studied it just like it was an owner's manual, a textbook for a college course, whatever it is. I started writing in the columns. I started studying what it said. I started highlighting everything, and I went through the steps and did them exactly and precisely as it was laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But you know what? My life started getting better. You know, I didn't win the lottery. I'm in more financial trouble today than I ever have been in my life. My health is worse than it's ever been in my life. But you know what? I haven't had to have a drink. The program works. You can go through anything. Death of a loved one. Death of a mother. Death of a father. You know, death of a very close friend. And you don't have to drink. Isn't that amazing? And when I was there at that Joe and Charlie thing, because I always had this thing in the back of my mind, why can't I drink like those other people? What is different about me than those other people? And I never realized it, but for an alcoholic, when you drink, it has a totally different reaction to us than it does the rest of the population. If somebody out there that's not an alcoholic takes a drink, what happens? They start feeling a little bit tipsy. They start feeling out of control. People don't like to feel out of control, so they throttle back. Occasionally they'll get drunk, but, you know, they don't keep doing it. You know, I've got a scar here from when I was a very small child. I stuck my finger in boiling water on the stove. My mother told me about it. I don't remember it. But to this day, I don't have the urge to stick my finger in boiling water again. You know? Why do I take that next drink? Why do I keep drinking? And I found out the way how I relate it, since I was raised in TV land. You might remember the old cartoon called Popeye. You know, and poor old Popeye, he couldn't get olive oil. Brutus was beating up on him. The world was going straight to hell in a handbag. And, you know, Popeye would reach out and grab that spinach can. And he'd pop that spinach can open and he'd eat that spinach and his muscles would come out. He'd beat up Brutus and he'd get olive oil. That's what booze did for me. In my mind, I was getting beat up by the world. I couldn't find a girlfriend. Business was hell. One drink, muscles, knew all the solutions. Get any woman I wanted to. Never did because I'd usually pass out before I could do anything. You know? And that's how it reacted to me. I felt more in control drinking than I did not drinking. That is the reason why we drink like we do. We feel more in control. We feel more relaxed. You know, that's us. That's what we do. So all I can tell you is just don't drink. Call people. Find out what's going on. Get involved in the program. You know, there for a while, tell you how my sponsor and I, God rest his soul, we were smokers back then, and if you weren't around these meetings years ago in the 80s, the Alano Club over there, when you'd walk in for a noon meeting, it'd be zero visibility from all the smoking. And him and I were smokers. Him and I started the first non-smoking meeting in Tulare County. It's called the Breath of Fresh Air. Everybody thought, oh, the Breath of Fresh Air. That must mean something about the program. No, it was non-smoking. You wanted to smoke, you smoked outside. You know? And that meeting grew and grew for quite a number of years. And, you know, now it's non-smoking everywhere. You know, if it was back in 86 and I was standing up here, you'd see the bottom of the podium. I mean, I remember one meeting I went to, an hour and a half meeting, I smoked a pack of cigarettes. And I wasn't the only one, you know. It was one after the other. So, welcome. And if you're a newcomer, get into the big book. It works. And thank you for letting me share.